Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 100-year-old Bill Gillette of San Jose, California. G.I. Gillette, as he was known to his fellow pilots in the 334th Fighter Squadron, part of the legendary 4th Fighter Group in World War II. They called him G.I. because he'd been drafted into the infantry before he ever pursued aviation. The skies suited Bill well, completing 59 missions with the 4th Fighter Group, which grew out of the Eagle squadrons of Americans flying with the Royal Air Force and ended up with more combined victories over German aircraft in the air and on the ground than any other group in the war. It was the first fighter group to escort Allied bombers over Berlin and also the first to escort the heavies on shuttle bombing runs landing in Russia, of all places.
The trip to Russia before we went, I don't like this mission. It's got showcase, you know. And sure enough, it turned out to be poorly planned or executed. We lost about half the bombers the first night. We're all in bed. We live in a, you know what a tent city is, kind of military. It's four or five guys in a tent, but they're strung so there's a street and tents on each side and ropes to one tent to guide to the next. Where did I tell that? Just about dark. It's end of June. So the long summer time, see, it's 7 hours flight plus pre-flight time, so we're all tired. The gun starting fire, well, we didn't know. The Germans had sent a night fighter troop, or they had found the airport. Night fighters lit flares, and then airplanes came in and shot up. I've destroyed about half of the bombers on that field. Well, some of the anti-aircraft guns were over on this side of our tent city, and there's, I climbed in a sleeping bag, zipped it up, and then, ooh, and here goes a 37-millimeter shell right through our top of our tents, it seemed like. I don't know how I changed. I went through the war. I came home. I am sure that I had to change because one of the things, I had a doctor who came in the bar. You need, if you didn't drink a couple of beers at night, he kind of questioned you that you needed to unload the things that were building up inside of you. Don't come home. Gosh, look how tough this was. Or anyway, watch Star Contact, and don't get too friendly with, you know, Joe, and Joe, don't be too friendly with him, because if you get shot down, he is not going to be up to snuff the next day. Reverse is going to be true. Those kind of things. I kind of went along, but in the years since, I've had time to think about what the transition. You are killing somebody every time you shoot down and blows up or crashes into the ground. So I didn't kill German pilots. I shot down German airplanes and tried to mentally keep that state. But the fear, I mean, everybody, you know, those who said didn't move, well, they're a little touched, you know. They're liable to react somehow. And the 59 missions were from about everything. I was in D-Day. I was airborne and over France before daylight. Flew 6.5 hours. Our Colonel Don stood in a briefing at midnight the night before and says, I told Ike there will not be any German airplanes coming. Our job is to fly just inside, on the German side, on the continent side of the, and down the Seine River, between 5,000 and 20,000 feet. So 16 of us went, so we were just on the German side of the beaches and the borders, and so that any German Luftwaffe airplanes come would have to come by where we could see them. I was 6.5 hours on that flight. Came back home. We were relieved by other people from our squadron. Then I went back mid-afternoon, something like that, and stayed till dark. Now, I understand there were a couple of German pilots in Goody Goodson, says he, but near dark, he took his wingman and got over there and didn't get shot at. So I don't know. I was there somewhere in that there as the sun was going down.
So you flew two missions on D-Day, the longest day that, you know, everybody has talked about ever since. And there's so many different elements and such a massive thing, and so many people died. But what did you see? Let's talk about that first part. When you're up there for 6 hours, you're just flying back and forth looking for German planes?
But there is a big storm comes through. The sailors were seasick, so you know what some of the infantrymen, the first vision, I did not see any enemy activity. The clouds, I couldn't see the ground. We flew headings and patterns and stuff, and I honestly don't know where I was a lot of the time. And the storm on the English Channel, I've talked to guys and they said, it was terrible. They not only weren't used to being in the water, but and so here's 40,000 people walking up that beach, knee-deep in the water. They must have been on a ship at midnight or something, and all that day. Now, for me, there was no sleeping. 5th and 6th, we went out early morning on the 5th. I don't think I would have known it was June the 5th. You know, we didn't keep track. I didn't know. I'm busy flying. I had to think about, how do I do this better? How do I do that better? Who will I fly with? How he flies? Those kind of things. See, we got up the first morning, went out on a short kind of tactical mission. I don't remember. I didn't carry tanks. On the way home, about 4 hours, there's a convoy headed southerly on up in Holland or up in that part north of France. We come home and reported that I went to lunch. And I come by and said, gee, I go back to operations, the truck go out there. I go back, there's 8 of us have been called back. They said, GI, here's your 3 guys. No bombs, guns. Those guys are going back and make that convoy go away. So you see that they don't get hurt. You and your 3 guys to make sure. So we went back and found the convoy and they bombed it. And I didn't fire a shot because no Germans came up and I wasn't going to go down and strafe. I didn't like strafing. It was a part of the thing, and I was lucky. But, boy, you're down there. I strafed an airdrome once, and the mechanic, if he'd been standing on the wing, could have thrown his wrench and hit my airplane. You're down 50 feet or something because you have to strafe. And those are all the things that went through my mind, and I'm sure it went through other people. We'd sit around and talk about tactical things. We played ping pong in the ready room, but we were always, usually someplace, we were fighting a battle kind of a thing. When this happens, do this. When this happens, do that. Remember, the backside of your airplane is defenseless. Don't let anybody get back there. And the same thing is true. The front side of your airplane is dangerous. You've got to keep it pointed at the enemy, and those kind of things, you know, they just seem very simple now, but I don't know that we'd ironed those things out. I would have ironed those things out in time to not get shot down. I can remember the first mission. I went out, and there I am, White 2. White 1 was the squadron leader. White 2 was his wingman. And White 4 was his wingman, so the most experienced man in the squadron was 1. 2, now I missed my first mission, so I'm up in front, not back behind where I'll get picked off. So anyway, they said, we need another fighter pilot, and the only way we'll find out, because Jerry's are the best people to sort out fighter pilots.
Thanks a lot. And for people who don't, maybe they weren't around then, they don't know what you're talking about. You're saying the enemy, the guy shooting at you, they're the ones who determine which ones of you can fly or not.
Yeah. And I succeeded in coming home every day in 59 times. And we got to a point where I asked for an extension at the time. 250 hours of combat time. The bombers flew missions, but their missions were lots longer than mine. They had flew slower. They had 10, 12 hours of fuel. Needed that to do some of the targets. And problems early on as the fighters couldn't go that far. The Germans were smart enough. They knew where the lake, and up in the Hamburg vicinity, there's a lake up there. That lake was about where the P-47s and 51s had to come home. And to go beyond that, the B-17s, B-24s didn't have anything but their own guns as protection.
So the Germans knew where the escorts would run out of range and had to turn back.
Yeah, and maybe not just sit out there and wait. Yes, And then when the P-51 come out and they hung 4 more hours of gasoline on it, why, that changed. And that's so we could go another hour farther in. P-51 was a good enough airplane to take advantage of that.
And you mentioned 59 missions in World War II, and I've read some about some of your close calls and your aerial victories, but I bet you had quite a few close calls that you can look back on now and say, hey, I wasn't too far away from not coming home.
Well, that's the way you had to fly. You needed to get close enough to not miss. Our range was, the guns, 6 guns were hired, so they had a range of crossing. 250 yards was the most lethal zone, where 3 guns were all aimed. First one was 225 yards, 250 and 275. So whatever errors and wobbles in the bullets, there. No use shooting if you could just barely tell it was an airplane. You also needed to keep track of that guy, because you maybe can't leave and reduce your force. Anyway, those were the kind of things you do. But Blakesley was quite good at keeping track of. He'd say, Deacon, do this. Jimmy, do this. G.I., do this. And he's up there looking, keeping track of where I am in my airplane when there's maybe 15 or 20 of us stewing around. Or he'd say, Jim, that's good, Jim Goodson. Take your squadron and go over and get outside of those guys and start squeezing them so they come by and those kind of things. So we had 2 or 3 very good tacticians, good sets of eyes, and recognizing airplanes. And that was the first thing, you know. That's not a German airplane. You learn a 109 sits nose down, tail high, like it's going downhill, just scooting across. It's a little airplane, littler than the P-51. B-17 looks like it's climbing a hill all the time, etc. B-24 formations fly loose and gaggly. The airfoils are such that they were difficult to keep into a fortress. It'd keep good formation, but they were slow, 150 or 60. We needed to be 200 and probably flew more than 250, more than we flew less than 200. We needed to have up where that airplane was ready to go, and max continuous power was your best bet. So how long the fight lasted. Sometimes it'd lose 10,000-15,000 feet. I ended once with, my group came in on the right side at the IP. They turned right, so this back here came about 50 109s. There was some on the other side, but these guys got the turn, and so I was looking at my bomber. Those look like Christmas trees, you know. The one mission I ended up in, and all of a sudden there's no airplane. There's 4 more airplanes, me and 4 airplanes. Now, those 4 have the wrong company logo on them. So I'm sitting there. Now what do I do? Not a P-51 in sight. We had descended out of the bomber train. The bomber was going on their bombing thing. Anyway, this is foolish. I got to get them all on one side. So I'd play with my turns, and so I got them all on the left side and just turned around. All guns going in right to the 4, because they're trying to turn right toward me, so they're all in front of me. And I got through and picked a speed. We had a climb speed of about 170 miles an hour, and at max continuous power, with a 109 just wouldn't match that climb. There were other things they would do quite well. Anyway, I don't know. I never looked back.
You're a little outnumbered there. And so you flew right between them. Do you know if you hit any of them or shot them down?
No. I shoot there, but one of the things, if you keep too low, you're going to run into them, because head on, you have to shoot up here. So that's going to put your airplane in a plane where in mid-air collision, and that wasn't to my liking.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't to your liking either when there was a hole in your wing and you were losing parts of your airplane. But if you're listening and you think you know what caused that, you might not have the right idea. We'll hear about that when we come back, and also about a mission in which Bill shot down 2 German fighters. Find photos of G.I. Gillette then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.
Some people see the challenge and say, send me. Some hear, it can't be done, and say,
I'll do it. Some choose to stand for something bigger than us all. If you're ready to step forward and do your part, then you might be ready to become a soldier in the U.S. Army. It's a diverse team that works together, trains hard, and adapts every day to be ready for anything that comes next. The U.S. Army turns soldiers into leaders capable of split-second decisions, extreme focus, and maximum endurance. These warriors lead their squads on missions armed with more than good intentions. They inspire their fellow soldiers to do better on and off the battlefield, making the Army a lethal and ready force. U.S. Army soldiers blaze a trail that leads to freedom. Do you have what it takes? Find your place on the team. Contact your local Army recruiter or visit goarmy.com/warriors.